You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman with a foreword by Stephen R. Covey. Last show, we were looking at how to become a multiplier. We were looking at admitting that, yes, becoming a multiplier requires an investment in time and effort. It takes initial effort to understand one's current impact on others and to be aware enough to formulate new approaches. But becoming a multiplier doesn't necessitate extra work. It doesn't have to be hard. You can, in fact, take the lazy way. In fact, the lazy way works best, and that's what we're going to look at next. The lazy way. Professionally speaking, I was raised among overachieving type A driven drivers. So it often surprises my clients when I suggest they take what I'll call the lazy way. Let me explain. I've noticed that the more important something is, the more likely a lazy man's approach will work best. When something is based on sound design, it doesn't need to be forced. It just needs the right amount of effort applied directly to the right place or the right way. Suppose you are repairing an appliance at home, and you need to open a casing by loosening a six-sided hex screw. You grab a pair of pliers from the drawer, and with the pliers gripping the two sides of the nut, you begin twisting. You pull, you turn, but you can't get a good grip. You try the pliers on the different two sides, hoping it'll be easier. You break a sweat trying to loosen this nut, but you can't make it bulge. Your tool-savvy roommate sees your futile effort and hands you a hex nut ratchet. This specifically designed tool encases the nut and provides the preset torque and leverage. You place this tool around the nut, and with virtually no effort, the nut turns and loosens. You can learn to lead like a multiplier by following the same principle. You can do it the hard way by tackling everything at once, or you can attempt to apply all five disciplines all the time and all the way. Chances are you will exert a great deal of effort, but show little progress, and you will eventually give up. Or you can take the lazy way, and with the right approach and tools, you make sustainable progress without overwhelming yourself or overwhelming others. I'm now going to discuss three lazy way strategies or accelerators that can propel you on your journey to becoming a successful multiplier. Any one of these, or all three together, will accelerate your development, enable you to attain maximum results with just the right amount of effort. The accelerator, one, work the extremes. How it works. Access your leadership practices and then focus your development on the two extremes. One, bring up your lowest low, and two, take your highest high to the next level. 2. Accelerator 2 is start with the assumptions. Adopt the assumptions of a multiplier and allow the behavior and practices to naturally follow. Accelerator 3. Take the 30-day multiplier challenge. How it works? Pick one practice within one discipline and work it for 30 days. With the right approach, leading like a multiplier is within reach. Some people will stumble into it over time, while others will never learn it and will possibly remain ignorant of their diminishing effect on those around them. But the assumptions and the five disciplines of the multiplier can be learned, and this learning can be accelerated. Let's consider a few examples of those who have taken their first steps and are just beginning to experience the payback. I'll share their stories and then outline the accelerators and tools that work for them. The accelerators. Accelerator number one, work the extremes. In 2002, Jack Zenger and Joe Falkman published a set of fascinating research findings in their book, The Extraordinary Leader. They studied 360-degree assessment data for 8,000 leaders, looking for what differentiated the extraordinary leaders from the average leaders. They found that the leaders who were perceived to having no distinguishing strengths were rated at the 34th percentile of effectiveness of all leaders in the study. However, when a leader was perceived as having just one distinguishing strength, his or her effectiveness shot to the 64th percentile. Having one towering strength almost doubled the effectiveness of the leader, providing the leader had no area of sharp weakness. Leaders with two, three, or four strengths jumped to the 72nd, 81st, and 89th percentile, respectively. The Zenger Folkman study demonstrates that leaders do not need to be good at everything. They need to have mastery of a small number of skills and be free of showstopper weaknesses. What does this imply for someone aspiring to lead like a multiplier? It means that you do not need to excel at each of the multiplier disciplines and master every practice. As we've studied multipliers, we noticed that each individual multiplier wasn't necessarily or even typically strong in all five disciplines. The majority of multipliers were strong in just three. There were many who were strong in four or even all five, but having strength in three of the disciplines appears to be a threshold for multiplier status. We also noticed that these multipliers were rarely in the diminisher range in any of the five disciplines. A leader does not have to be exceptional in all five disciplines to be considered a multiplier. A leader needs two or three strong disciplines, and the other disciplines can be just good enough. Spencer Kaplan is a director of sales operations for a global consumer products company. In this role, Spencer manages the operational infrastructure that enables the sales teams and works across several sales channels and sales leaders. The organization made an investment in Spencer to ready him for a larger, more complex role supporting the entire global business. Spencer launched a 360-degree feedback process and met with his coach to review the data. After reviewing the results of the 360-degree feedback, he was inundated with a plethora of data and was unsure of which skills he should develop. But as he filtered the data, searching for the extremes, the highest highs and the showstopper lows, two critical development targets emerged. First, his chief strength was readily apparent. The organization viewed him as a trusted advisor. His colleagues trusted his judgment and his objective analysis and knew that he operated entirely without ego. He was known for his ability to gather players from across the organization and to use these people to develop collaborative solutions. Second, his vulnerability was also obvious. While the organization viewed him as a rock star, his peers and various bosses were concerned that the capability gap between him and his team was just too large. While he was advising the rest of his organization, he hadn't been sufficiently investing in his own team. The feedback from the stakeholders was clear. They could not expand his role unless the team members were growing their abilities as fast as he was. Spencer and his coach built a two-pronged development plan. The first priority was to shore up his vulnerability by investing in his immediate team. He identified several practices of the investor to work on giving real ownership to his team, expanding their roles, and expecting complete work. After giving his manager greater ownership, he would step back and coach, allowing natural consequences to teach and develop them. With this work well underway, Spencer began topping off his strength as a trusted advisor. His aim was to go beyond just developing collaborative solutions. He wanted to be able to lead the most rigorous of debates. Spencer worked in a data organization, so the role of the debate maker was a natural extension of his strength as a trusted advisor. He began to tackle the tough business issues that were going unresolved. He focused his development on these practices, gathering the critical players, framing the issues, and leading the rigorous debate. With these two development goals clear, he disregarded most of the other feedback. He continued to naturally practice and refine many of the other practices of the multiplier. But his purposeful development was clear. Focus on the extremes by topping off the biggest strength and neutralizing a weakness that prevent the growth of his team, the growth of himself, and perhaps even the growth of the company. Instead of trying to develop strength in all five disciplines, an aspiring multiplier should set an extreme development plan. Begin by assessing your leadership practices, and then work the two extremes. One, neutralize a weakness, and two, top off strength. Based on the research in this book, we've developed a multi-rater assessment tool that can be found at www.multipliersbook.com. Taking this 360-degree assessment, you will get started in identifying your relative strengths among the diminisher-multiplier continuum. When reviewing your report, look for your extremes. Which discipline is your strongest? Are there any disciplines dangerously within diminisher territory? With this information, pursue the two major strategies. One, neutralize a weakness. A common misconception in executive coaching is that coaching or development can, or even should, turn your weakness into strengths. Clients have often told me, I'm terrible at this and I need to become really great at it. I suggest to them that while this may be possible, it is unlikely that they will turn their biggest weaknesses into their biggest strengths. The truth is that you do not need to be fabulous at everything. You just can't be bad. You simply need to neutralize the weaknesses and move it into the middle, acceptable zone. Having realistic goals frees up capacity to do the most important development work, turning your modest strengths into towering strengths. Two, top off a strength. As Zenger and Folkman and many others have found, leaders with a small number of strengths are viewed more highly than leaders with a broad base of capabilities. Of the five disciplines, identify your strongest area, then build a deep and broad repertoire of practices that allows you to excel at this discipline. Become a world-class challenger, a resounding talent magnet. Invest your energy wisely and progress from good to great by topping off one of your strengths. Working the extremes by paying attention to your highs and lows while ignoring the middle offers an efficient and sustainable pathway to leadership development. The strategies we have described can become more pinpointed through rigorous multi-rater assessment. In addition to working the extremes, you can also accelerate your development by adopting the assumptions of a multiplier. Accelerator number two. Start with the assumptions. To score a strike in 10-pin bowling, you need to hit the head pin. Hitting the head pin directly will knock down most of the pins behind it, hitting it in just the right place on the left or right side allows the bowler to knock down all the pins in a single strike. The assumptions of a multiplier are the head pin to becoming one. Because behavior follows assumptions, you can knock out a whole set of behaviors by adopting the right belief. Consider the following scenario and how you might approach it with either a diminisher or multiplier assumption. You are about to start your weekly one-on-one with your marketing manager, Janthi Gupta. Another executive has asked that you appoint someone from your division as a representative on a cross-divisional task force which will assess the company's competitive position and recommend changes to the current marketing programs. You decide to put Jayanti on the task force and plan to use this one-on-one meeting to tee up this assignment. From a diminisher's assumption, how would you approach this meeting if you assume people will never figure this out without me? How would you define Janthi's role? What role would you take? How would you explain the assignment? How would you monitor progress? With this assumption, you would probably use Janthi as your representative, your eyes and ears in the project. She would attend the meetings, gather information, and then report back so that you could weigh in on the issues. You would probably explain the assignment by telling her that she is representing you and how important it is that she not give anyone the wrong impression about what is happening in your division. What is the result of this approach? Janthi spends a lot of time attending meetings, but contributes very little to the task force. She is careful not to overstep her role as she passes up opportunities to speak out and steers clear of any controversial issues where she might be called on to influence a decision. You provide input at a couple of junctions, but most of the important decisions happen live during the meetings. At the conclusion of the task force, you find that several decisions were made that are not in the best interest of your division, and you hear through the grapevine that the task force leader commented about the lack of engagement from your division.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you're listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
Every year, countless people succumb to the temptation to purchase exotic animals like hedgehogs, lizards, monkeys, even tigers and bears to keep as pets. But life in captivity is often a death sentence for these animals who may suffer from malnutrition, an improper environment, and the stress of confinement. For more information on this issue, visit the BCSPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman, with a foreword by Stephen Covey. We're continuing on the task of becoming a multiplier. The next section is from a multiplier assumption. How would you approach this differently if you believe people are smart and can figure it out? You would be clear that you chose Janthi for her understanding of the market and her ability to assimilate the vast amounts of market data that the task force is assembling. You would let her know that she was representing the entire division and that she was fully responsible for implementing the task force outcomes. You might recommend that she come to meetings armed with data so she can weigh in on our issues and think on her feet during the debates. You would let her know that this task force is her project, but that you're available as a sounding board if she wants to jointly think through the issues. What are the results of this approach? Janthi engages fully in the task force, gains new understanding of the competitive landscape, and advocates for marketing programs that will have immediate benefits for your division. He impresses the task force leader, who thinks this group has great talent. The assumptions we hold shape our views, our practices, and in the end have power of effect on outcomes, often forming a self-fulfilling prophecy. One aspiring multiplier told us that the moment he started shifting his assumptions, he could see new opportunities everywhere. Instead of feeling overwhelmed that he was a bottleneck and frustrated that he had to redo other people's work, he started asking, how can I improve the situation without putting myself at the center of this situation? If you want to apply multiplier skills and behaviors naturally and instinctively, try on the multiplier assumptions and see how they guide your actions. It's possible to construct charts to summarize some of the key assumptions of diminishers and multipliers that provide a starting point. For example, in the discipline of being a talent magnet, the diminisher assumption is people need to report to me in order to get them to do anything. The multiplier assumption, on the other hand, is if I can find someone's genius, I can put them to work for me and for the organization. Discipline, liberator. The diminisher assumption is pressure increases performance. The multiplier assumption is people's best thinking must be given, not taken. The discipline of challenger. The diminisher's assumption is needing to have all the answers. The multiplier's assumption is people get smarter by being challenged. Then the discipline of debate maker. The diminisher's assumption is there is only a few people worth listening to. The multiplier's assumption, on the other hand, is with enough minds, we can all figure it out. The next discipline is investor. The diminisher's assumption is people will never be able to figure it out without me. On the other hand, the multiplier assumption is people are smart and will figure things out. Accelerator number 3, take the 30-day multiplier challenge. The most effective and enduring learning involves small, successive experimentation with new approaches. When these small experiments produce successful outcomes, the resulting energy fuels the next slightly bigger experiment. Over time, these experiments form new patterns of behavior that establish a new baseline. One technique to catalyze this cycle of experimentation is to take the 30-day multiplier challenge and focus all your efforts on a single discipline for 30 days. Why 30 days, you may ask? Research shows that it takes approximately 30 days of concentrated effort to form a new habit. Like any good researcher, you should record your experiences in a journal, learning from what works and from what doesn't. Here's a glimpse into what happened when 5 different leaders, and in some cases their management teams, took the 30-day challenge. We've highlighted one of each of the 5 disciplines, and we've changed several names to protect the privacy of those individuals. Labeling talent. Jack Bossidy was the team leader in a manufacturing plant. He could see some members of his team dominated meetings while others withdrew. Curiously, the one person who spoke most in the meetings was the one person who felt the most underutilized and undervalued on the team. Jack decided to take the 30-day challenge and began by genius watching. He took note of the native genius of each member of his team. In the next staff meeting, he spoke of each person, why they were needed on the team, and the unique capabilities that they brought. He went beyond labeling each person's genius one-on-one and labeled it in front of the whole group. The team then reviewed the work that needs to get done over the next quarter and determine assignments. Although not explicitly asked of them, the team naturally ensured each person had an assignment that demanded one or more of his or her unique capabilities. What do you think to the undervalued but overly dominating team member? He actually talked less, listened more, and began to draw out the capabilities of the others. Under the leadership of an aspiring multiplier, he went from dominating to multiplying. He told Jack, "It feels like we were really working as a team now." Liberating Lokesh. Christine faced a common management challenge, how to get the most out of the smart but timid colleague that she worked with. Lokesh always showed deference to other people's ideas. Instead of offering his own opinion, he would just go with what other people recommended. It gave others the impression that he simply didn't have any ideas. Christine found that it was easy to dominate meetings with Lokesh. Without meaning to, she would end up overexpressing her views and speaking 80% of the time. The more she tried to rescue him, the worse things seemed to be. The more she mentored Lokesh, the less he seemed to contribute. Christine therefore took the 30-day challenge and focused on being a liberator to Lokesh by making more space for him. She began by asking, "How is Lokesh smart?" The question snapped out of her the more judgmental, diminisher assumptions, and then put her on an adventure safari. As his abilities slowly came into focus for her, his years of experience and his ability to break complex activities into actionable plans, she found it easier and easier to ask questions and give him the space to answer them. Christine noticed an immediate change. Lokesh started to offer opinions. He spoke 50% or more in their interactions. He volunteered for the majority of the action items. He stepped into the role of a creator, and within days, one of the clients had commented to Christine about the amazing difference. Christine summarized her learning by saying, quote, "The silence creates the space. The space creates results. The results are valuable, and I have already seen a payoff," unquote. In future shows, we're going to continue looking at the other aspects of becoming a multiplier from the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter. So please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week. We'll be right back.
JSF, Radio Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.